Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Due, and today's date is Tuesday, July 24th, 2012, and here's a little look at what we have coming up tonight.
Tonight, U.S. troops to assist local authorities in criminal investigations. As the Associated Press reports that Marine Corps law enforcement battalions are training to control civil disturbances. Then, Ice-T defends gun rights and says it's the last form of defense against tyranny. Plus, a man with Tourette's says cops beat him for their own amusement. And Rob Due talks with Webster Tarpley about the disinformation campaign against Syria. All that and more up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
All right, as you can see, we have a big show, so let's get started right into the saga that is James Holmes, the so-called Batman Massacre. I guess he's just the crazy nut now, but now we've learned that he has DARPA connections in his past. So let's just go over these real quick. In fact, they go all the way back to his grandfather. James Holmes was one of six recipients of the National Institutes of Health Neuroscience Training Grant at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus in Denver. That was found by Wayne Madsen. The medical campus is recently decommissioned site for the U.S. Army's Fitzsimmons Army Medical Center and is named after Philip Anschutz, the billionaire Christian fundamentalist oil and railroad tycoon. Furthermore, Holmes also worked as a research assistant intern at the Salk Institute of the University of California at San Diego. Now, he did this in high school. And the Salk Institute teamed up with DARPA, Columbia University, the University of California at San Francisco, and the University of Wisconsin, Wake Forest, and the candy bar company Mars to prevent fatigue and combat truths through enhanced use of a blood-flowing, dilating, antioxidant flavanol found in cocoa. So they made this magic chocolate that would keep troops going all the time. And so there's your first DARPA connection. The second one, in addition, James's father, Dr. Robert Holmes, worked for the San Diego-based HNC Software Incorporated, a company that worked with DARPA to develop chronic neural networks that enable machines to translate oral and visual stimuli and stimulate human thinking. But it doesn't stop there. The Holmes family appears to have deep connections to the military-industrial complex. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Holmes, grandfather of James Holmes, was a Turkish language graduate of the Army Language School, and later the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, the same installation, incidentally, where alleged 9/11 hijacker Saeed Alarmi supposedly trained. So you got all these deep DARPA connections with James Holmes. You see him in court. His eyes are bugging out of his skull. He looks totally detached from reality. Nobody seems to be questioning that, at least in the mainstream media. Everybody else is wondering, what's this guy on? But, of course, there's nothing there. Now, ABC News, right when it came out, they reported, and it was on Drudge, it said, "Mother, you have the right person." And then it also said he's a member of a Tea Party. Well, now Politico's reporting Holmes' mother suggests ABC News mischaracterized her statement. And she was awakened by the media. Basically, the reporter asked if Arlene Holmes was my son, James Holmes. This is Arlene talking, who lives in Aurora, Colorado. I answered, "Yes, you have the right person." I was referring to myself. Then they ran with that headline, "You have the right person," trying to imply that she knew that this guy could explode at any minute, and they finally caught him. Well, in that very same article that ABC listed that information, they initially suggested the suspect might have connections with the Colorado Tea Party Patriots. The report was based off a single web profile of a man with the same name and was inaccurate. ABC News and one of its reporters, Brian Ross, later apologized for the mistake. So they're really quick to run out there and say, "Oh, he's at a Tea Party. His mother knew that he was crazy," trying to keep that narrative alive and going forward so no one would question the initial story. And then you have the cops coming out saying no one else is involved, but you have eyewitnesses saying there were second shooters. There was a gas canister that came from another location. The lights and the projector went off at the same time while the shooter was in the process of shooting people. So this thing, of course, stinks to high heaven. Now, the one same piece of news here is gun sales spike almost double after Batman massacre. And this is out of the Denver Post. said Friday through Sunday, Colorado approved a total of 2,800, over 2,800 background checks. Again, a 43% rise in the same period. So it's, you got a lot of people saying, I didn't think I needed a gun, but I do now. This is from Jake Myers. He works at the Parker Gun Store. What happens in your backyard when it, you know, when it happens in your backyard, people start reassessing. Hey, I go to the movies. Should I have a gun? And here's another piece of news. Ice-T defends gun rights, saying they're the last form of defense against tyranny. And that's from Ice-T. He's been a big proponent of guns ever since he came out rapping back in the 80s. He says it's legal in the United States. The right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Not to hunt. It's to protect yourself from police. Okay, let's go to that clip now.
It's part of our Constitution. You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Well, I give up my gun when everybody else does.
There you go. So when everybody else gives up their guns, and he's talking about military and police, he'll give up his. Which leads us to our next story. Houston cop arrested for handcuffing and raping woman after traffic stop. And here we have a guy, Adon Carranza, who was on duty when there was a small fender bender. He handcuffed this woman, put her in the back of his car, and then allegedly raped her with his gun and badge on the entire time after everybody left the scene. So this is a gross example of why we need an armed citizenry, to basically hold in check those tyrannical forces that could become the police at any time. Well, we're not done there. Man with Tourette's says cops beat him for their own amusement. This is a Georgia man, suffers from Tourette's syndrome, says police deactivated a device that controls his symptoms and then beat him for their own amusement. He's suing Chatham County Sheriff's Office for negligence and infliction of emotional distress. Upon being brought to the Chatham County Jail for processing, Ray alleges he was warning officers that passing through the facility's metal detector would deactivate the battery-powered deep brain stimulator that helps him control his Tourette's syndrome. If the device was not work, Ray's prone to uncontrollable tics and obscene outbursts, typical with the neurological disorder. After the device was deactivated, Ray was at the mercy of the disorder, and he says cops repeatedly harassed him and beat him as a form of amusement. So there we've just shown you a couple instances of cops just overstepping their bounds. So we've just shown you a couple instances where police, these are just regular domestic police, have abused their authority and rape people, or at least allegedly rape people. They're beating people with Tourette's syndrome. Later on in the show, Melissa Melton's going to cover the situation in Anaheim where after a young man was shot, people wanted to find out why they shot this unarmed man. Well, the cops started, they claimed it was a riot and started shooting rubber bullets into children. They released a dog on people and they claimed it was an accident. You know, the dog accidentally climbed out of the car and went chasing people down. You know, that's how, I guess that's how it works in police world. But now we're going to move to the military training inside domestically. So here's the article. Marine Corps law enforcement battalions to control civil disturbances. And this is from Steve Watson, troops to assist local authorities in criminal investigations. Units of hundreds of military police officers trained to investigate crimes have been created by the Marine Corps and will assist local authorities in securing crime scenes, building cases, reports the Associated Press. The report notes that the battalions will be capable of helping control civil disturbances, handling detainees, carrying out forensic work, and using biometrics to identify suspects. So we've been showing you this for a long time, and I'm about to go over some examples because I'm sure there's people in denial out there that the military is going to be working with civilians. And it kind of leads us to this last quote here in the article. Indeed, back in 2008, Washington Post reported 20,000 troops returning from Iraq would be stationed inside America under NORTHCOM for purposes of domestic security from September 11th onwards. Well, that was The Washington Post in 2008. By 2009, it had jumped to 400,000. We're going to go to a quick video here of Alex. This is from Police State for the Rise of FEMA, discussing just a few articles of the different troops that are being deployed all over the United States. So they may not be in your area today, but we're about to document a bunch of stuff in case you're in denial out there. Here's that first video.
Now, let's go ahead and go over these articles. Brigade Homeland Tour starts October 1st. 3rd Infantry's 1st BCT trains for new dwell time mission. Helping people at home may become a permanent part of active army. And then you read this, the Washington Post reported it, everybody else did. It says, for riot control and civil unrest during a collapse of society. Then the Army War College came out a month later and said, yes, we're preparing to engage the American people. So there's that going on. So they have to have troops to take you to the FEMA camps. Washington Post, 20,000 more U.S. troops to be deployed for domestic security. They then expanded and said it won't be 4,000 troops, it'll be 20,000. Now they're saying, oh, it'll be 40,000 regular Army troops. The very troops that were in Baghdad doing gun confiscation, the very best troops they've got. Well, here's another one. Marines admit security force to operate inside U.S. This directly from the Marine Corps' own website. And they did it with role players, practicing confiscating people's guns. Here's another one. Unit learned skills to fight different enemy. And this is out of the American Force Press Service. See, this is all part of acclimation. And then in a four-state area in the Midwest a few months ago, there was a report about the Army suddenly locking down parts of cities and doing... And then the disgraced Governor Blagojevich announced about 5 months ago before he had that big scandal, and we played the newscast here where he said we're going to have the Army go door-to-door confiscating guns in Illinois.
So that's just a few articles, and that's just one section of the film, Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA, which we have at our InfoWars shop. And I just want to go over a few more articles here in case you're still in denial. Florida Guard to support Super Bowl security. This is in 2007, okay? And that's the American Force Press Service. Here's another one, Tangled Up in Blue, posted March 5th, 2009. And this is about Marines conducting sobriety checkpoints in California. Okay, so then the Marines are helping, teaming up with the police all to keep us safe. Here's another one. Military police at Kentucky Derby. Okay, they were stationed there. They were helping pull people off the tracks because those guys could be terrorists, people who run on the tracks, and we have to have the police there. And basically, that's all conditioning to get you to look at, you know, to basically acclimate you to having police on the streets. Here's that article that was just in the video you saw. The Pentagon wants the authority to post almost 400,000 military personnel in the United States. That came out August 12, 2009. So it's been going on for a while, and it's not going to stop. They're going to keep ratcheting it up. That's why, you know, anytime we see these articles, we post them just to let you know that it's still happening. Now, the next piece we're going to go to, this is a news report that was also in Police State for the Rise of FEMA, and this has to do with police and National Guard training together to fight, you know, domestic civil disturbances, terrorism, anything that may crop up. So this is out of Shreveport, Louisiana. Here we go with that clip.
Let's go ahead and get to this. I mean, you want to see, you know, what goes with FEMA camps like a horse and carriage? Troops, militarized police, training with the Army to take over your cities and towns. Let's go ahead and play this YouTube clip, Martial Law is Coming, from News 7 at 11.
The scenario was a fake, but the pepper spray and billy clubs used to break up this riot were definitely real. Good evening, I'm Miranda Stevens. Whether it's terrorism, riots, or any major disaster, local agencies will be the first to respond. That's why Roanoke City wants its disaster training to be as real as possible. Jeremy Butterfield has more.
It's supposed to look like a riot, and the scene at William Fleming High School had all the elements.
I'm one of the rioters that the guard and the police force had to take down and arrest. And did very successfully.
In this scenario, everyone has a role to play. The rioters were ready to fight back as Roanoke Police, Roanoke Fire, local National Guard troops, and members of the Virginia Defense Force secured perimeters and moved in to make the arrests.
Prior to 9/11, these organizations couldn't communicate and did not work together. They worked to support each other, but not together. And with the recent events of the last 3 to 5 years, we've become very good at working together, which is very important.
It's very important to have military and police working together. And they always, anytime you question them, they go, well, it's National Guard. They're here for the states. Well, they're not here to come out and quell civil disturbances because these are also the same troops that we do send to Iraq and we do send to Afghanistan. And so these people are coming back with a whole different mentality of working in a hostile environment to coming to America. So it's setting a bad precedent. But I'm sure you're still not convinced, so we're going to move on. Here's one out of a Tennessee checkpoint, a seatbelt checkpoint that was being set up by the military police out of Tennessee, along with Homeland Security and a few other local agencies. So we're just going to roll that. And this is with a state rep out of Tennessee, Johnny Shaw.
You bet. Now, we played the clip earlier of you on a local news station talking about Army checkpoints. The governor found out, thanks to you and others, and canceled it. Can you just, in a nutshell, tell us exactly, specifically, what was going on?
Yes, I can. First of all, I have got a check. Now, I don't have concrete facts, but I don't think the military has, first of all, any jurisdiction to be checking seatbelts. When you look at the fact of a military unit being out, your daughter, my wife, or someone driving through a roadblock with all of these local officials, the Army, and everybody out there, I think it's just going to scare people to death. I think our local and state officials have the staff when needed to check seat belts, to do a seat belt check without the Army getting involved. And I just don't think it's a good idea.
Well, obviously, sir, I don't know if you've heard, but yes, it still violates Posse Comitatus. They haven't completely removed that 1878 law. We know in Mexico and communist China, they have troops on the streets. This is a sign of a banana republic of a third world police state. So that we don't want that. But the larger issue here is that they've announced Homeland Security wants to put 20,000 regular Army troops to patrol America. The Naval War College, the Army War College, has said their new job will be engaging us, combat with the American people to stop an insurrection against the banks. So, A, are you aware of that? B, can you tell us specifically what units, why the Army was going to be out running checkpoints?
Well, I got this news late on Friday, and when I got the news, I immediately jumped on it to try to call some local authorities that I knew first to see what was going on. And when I made the call, I found out at that point in time that the governor had already made the decision to cancel this, and which I was very proud of that. But I am not aware of Homeland Security doing this. I did hear that they would be involved in this roadblock issue on last Friday, but I am not aware of the other part of the question that you asked.
So there you go. They had the Army going out conducting seatbelt checkpoints because, of course, it's there for your safety. Now we're going to move on to another one. These are all in Police State 4. You can watch the whole thing. We cover it from top to bottom. We cover the FEMA camps. We cover the executive orders. We cover the troops on the streets. We cover the military and police working together. We spotlight G20, where they use the sound cannon on people for the first time. We cover the underwear bomber. You know, we were calling it a false flag from day one. And, of course, we were right, once again, just like this shooter in Colorado. And that's already coming out. Let's move to Arcadia, Iowa, where the guardsmen there were actually conducting drills where they were going house to house. They had different areas set up. This guy was a gun dealer, so they were questioning him. He may have been of interest. But they say this is training, so when we go into Iraq, you know, we're used to working in domestic locations, even though probably a little town in Arcadia, Iowa is not going to look the same as some town in Iraq, but that's their excuse, of course, to just continue this training to get people used to seeing troops on the street. So let's go to that clip now.
So that's part of the preparation. Guardsmen to conduct urban training at Arcadia in April. This is going on scale back now. It says in this article, going door to door asking if they can search homes looking for weapons. And they practice raiding the local gun shop. And this is for domestic operations. Lieutenant Colonel, I really appreciate you coming on such short notice, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. I saw this article out of the Daily Times Herald in Carroll, Iowa. Have you seen that?
I sure have.
It's telling us about an urban warfare drill to be held in several towns. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. It's actually a planned training event to provide our soldiers with greater proficiency at what we call cordon and search, which is a mission that, just for a little background, we've deployed nearly 13,000 members of the Iowa National Guard in the Global War on Terror, and the vast majority of those have been in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one of the missions that they perform in Iraq and Afghanistan on multiple occasions is cordon and search, where basically you are trying to get to an area, cordon it off to make sure everything's safe, and then actually search for caches of weapons or other kinds of contraband which could harm American forces and other
like
soldiers.
Fallujah, what we saw in
Correct.
Fallujah.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Exactly. So because of where we're located in Iowa, there are no active duty bases in Iowa. So we kind of have to create our own urban training environments. So the plan on this particular training event was to actually use a small town of about 450 people. The town has actually kind of adopted the unit, which is called Company A, 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry. And they were more than willing to participate in the exercise.
Going through this article, I mean, explaining exactly what they're going to do door to door with the houses, what the checkpoints are going to be simulating.
Sure. When you're talking about cordon and search operations, you've got several different rings of security that you've got to provide in a particular area. And then it's important that people are treated respectfully as you go house to house, as you're looking for certain items, particularly in our experience in Afghanistan and Iraq, looking for weapon caches, whether those have AK-47s, RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades, that is, any kind of ammunition or any kind of improvised explosive devices, et cetera, et cetera. And our job, when we go on a cordon search, is to locate those kinds of items. And then there might also be persons of interest that we're interested in that coalition forces want to talk to or apprehend.
Well, let's just boil it down to this. I have video of Army and Marines with role players screaming, "I'm an American, please don't put me in the camp," and the military trying to confiscate their firearms. I mean, certainly you've heard the Army Times and the new directive from Secretary of Defense Robert Gates that they will use the National Guard under federal control for civil insurrection. Are you saying you're not aware of that?
No, I'm certainly aware of that, absolutely. But I think you have to look at the role of the National Guard historically. Is that historically, we are used in states for disasters overwhelmingly. And our job is to, number one, be ready for our mission federally, which is to go to war. And number two is to help our fellow citizens mm-hmm. here in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Those
but
are
the Army,
that we prepare for and train for.
The Army War College 3 weeks ago issued a report saying they're shifting a lot of their focus to engaging the American people and directives on engagement with the American people under NORTHCOM.
Well, you got to remember that the National Guard, 99% of the time, is in, if you're talking about peacetime, belongs to the state in which they are located. Only on occasion do they become federalized. One of those examples, of course, is being mobilized and deployed to go to war or peacekeeping or other kinds of federalized missions. But other than that, the National Guard, generally in peacetime, belongs to the governor of that state.
Well, you're pretty informed on all these issues. Obviously, you're right in the middle of it. Have you heard about the mainstream news articles about Marines in California and other places helping at DWI checkpoints with citizens? Would that violate posse comitatus?
I'm not aware of that. With respect to active duty military, that's called Title 10 when you're on active duty, and they're not allowed to participate in certain kinds of operations under the Posse Comitatus Act.
Does that sound like freedom to you all over the country to have the National Guard at big events like at the Kentucky Derby and the Super Bowl searching bags?
So you can see from that clip, Alex is asking him direct questions, and the lieutenant colonel is tap dancing around him. He's evading him. He tries to just play it off as, oh, we're here for peacetime operations and just to assist the state there. But they're practicing going around confiscating your weapons. We showed that before, that they've done it last week with Katrina, and that they're preparing to do it again. And it could be any disaster. And what they'll do is they will cordon off the area, block all exits out, and go house by house until they get all the guns. And they're not going to be nice about it. They're going to kick in your door at night as they're asking, do you need assistance? So now, just a year and a half ago, I went to Chicago to film Operation Vigilant Guard. We went in, we told them, you know, we were doing a piece on this. We wanted to discuss it. It was a five-day exercise. They had a terrorist attack on an airplane that blew up over Chicago. There were dead bodies everywhere, which were fake. They were dummies. And then they also did some drills at a local soccer stadium. And so that was their base of operations. Then they went out and did all these other little drills, one of which was a quote-unquote meth lab takedown where they were working with Polish troops. The Polish troops were there, quote, as observers. But then we'll get to that clip later. But first, let's hear it from the Captain Bright and the Lieutenant Leziak from the Polish Armed Services. Here's that clip.
Program manager for the SURF-P program for the Illinois National Guard. Here with Mitch Leziak from the Polish Epidemiological Response Center of the Polish Armed Forces. We're here participating in a homeland security exercise We'll be working on military support to civil authorities as part of a terrorist scenario where they have a biological weapon. Major Lysiak and the Polish Armed Forces have a partnership program with the Illinois National Guard. We do cooperative training and exercises, and it's been very beneficial to both of our services in helping us develop our capabilities. The exercise today and what you'd expect to see will be some terrorist scenarios in which there are multiple casualties. We'll have search and extraction team that will be extracting casualties from different facilities. Those personnel that are extracted would be contaminated potentially with a biohazard. So we'll have a mass casualty decontamination team that will decontaminate them. And then we have a medical triage and treatment team that will provide medical care to them before they're moved by ambulance, if necessary, to a long-term, to a hospital or other type of long-term care facility. You'll see National Guard cooperating with civilian authorities. Typically when we respond, we only fall under a civilian incident commander because we're in the States. We respond to their needs, their requests. We're basically a force provider and bring specific skills to the table to assist local law enforcement and civil authorities in providing the services and protection to the people in their areas.
My name is Major Emil Lisiak. I'm from Demiological Response Center of Polish Armed Forces. And we are here with my soldiers to make a next step in our cooperation with soldiers from Illinois National Guard. This cooperation started 5 years ago. Last year we had a big exercise in Poland, near Warsaw, and this year we have a great opportunity to participate in exercise in Chicago. That's a partnership between Illinois National Guard and the Polish. The state of Illinois is a partnership for Poland. So okay. we have good connections, and this is the reason why we train together from 5 years. So here it's 12, and the second group is 10, and they are designated to a civil support team in another place, so we are divided to do groups to learn as much as possible.
Okay, and is it just Polish Army, or are there other
forces? Yeah, we have also participants from our Ministry of Interior, from Fire State of Poland, and from Polish FBI, and there are also another group from police.
Do you have American forces in Poland? Do you do exercises with them there?
Actually, we have American soldiers, but that they have no connections with us because there is special forces, another kind of forces. But we had at least three exercises together with our colleagues from Illinois National Guard during last 4 years.
Okay, but that was very telling, you know. So we
there
have special
you go. We have, I mean, there was a lot going on in that clip. Basically, we've been training with the Polish government, at least in Illinois, for 5 years doing these disaster training scenarios. And everywhere you went during that exercise, it was all about how the Polish were going to be observing. They're just observing. They're not participating. Although there you saw some of the members of the Polish FBI. They had the orange suits on. They were putting those on as they were participating in the exercise. They didn't want to speak with us on camera, though. They're very polite about it. Now I want to just roll this. I'm going to talk over it. Right after this exercise, they did an exercise. It was a terrorism exercise with a biological agent. And there you can see them taking out the terrorists. And those are American troops right there, the police, and some National Guard mixed in. And then you go and you have these Boy Scouts. They're the victims. And then they treat them like prisoners. But then lo and behold, you know, what's coming down the stairs? Well, those are American troops. But then behind those guys carrying guns and shouting orders at people and telling people where to line up, well, just go ahead and scrub forward. We'll see. It's a long clip, and you can watch the whole thing. You just type in operation. There it is. Back up a little bit. There it is. BOA. That's Bureau Organization of Anti-Terrorism. That's the Polish, basically Polish Anti-Terrorism Bureau. So there they are joining in on the exercise. later on, I actually confronted a one of these high-level bureaucrats with emergency services for Chicago specifically at another exercise, and he flat-out denied that the Polish were participating. Well, you know, we'll just keep rolling this stuff, and you can see they are participating. They're helping out. They're, you know, they're basically holding, you know, helping hold U.S. troops hostage. There it is. There's a shot of them right there. You can go by. They were lining them up. They're helping them march down to the decontamination area. Clearly, policing, that's not how you spell police in English. I'll tell you that right there. That's Polish for police. So there, you know, this is ongoing. And this was a year and a half ago, so who knows what's going on now. But we are working closely with other people's armed forces. We're working closely with our military forces. And they're all working together to come in to the United States to do domestic operations. Okay? That's where it's all leading to. And this leads us to our last article before we throw it to Melissa Melton. Hummerock residents discuss seceding from, and I'm just going to go with it, Sictuate in bonfire dispute. I have no idea if that's the right way to pronounce that, but nearly 100 people attended a meeting in South Hummerock Civic Association Clubhouse. At the meeting, some residents went to call the township officials fascist, and they said Hummerock needs to break away. Apparently, there was full military operation. I mean, Hummers up and down the beach. State police helicopters, horseback, bomb squad, and command post up center. Says Fred Hayden, who owns a summer home in Hummerock. And what were they all there for? They were there to stop people from creating bonfires. That's what they were worried about, because apparently somebody made one, it got out of control, burned a few houses down. So this year for the 4th of July, they were going to make sure there were no bonfires in the area. And the Hummerock residents say, every time you talk to them, it's in a threatening fashion, longtime resident Imre Langelas said during Sunday's meeting. So you can see it. People are getting tired of the police state, and they're pushing back. And what happens when you push back and when you question the authorities? Well, we're now going to go to Melissa Melton, and she's going to cover some goings-on that are happening in Anaheim, California. Let's hear what you have to say, Melissa.
Thanks, Rob. This is Melissa Melton with InfoWars Nightly News. So when you're being followed by a cop in your rearview mirror, do you feel safe, protected, or do you feel nervous? When police shot and killed an unarmed man fleeing on foot in Anaheim, California on Saturday, residents gathered to ask why. Their answer came in the form of police shooting rubber bullets into a crowd of unarmed, terrified civilians, including women and children. And one cop even let loose a canine into the crowd, which took off straight for a baby in a stroller. We've just been showing you some excerpts from this video, but let's take a look at the full clip.
We just started shooting. Again. No, we don't have no guns, nothing.
I just got scared. I just saw a water bottle get thrown in the air. They just started shooting everyone. They shot a little kid too.
Out here, there were dozens of people who had their cell phones, and at least four different people told me that police officers offered to buy their video from them without any explanation. Of course, that's all part of this investigation as it continues to develop out here in Anaheim.
We just started shooting.
In the wake of this event, we're really left with two versions of what happened. There's the official police version, and then there's the video we all just saw. And William Grigg and LouRockwell.com breaks it down in his story, The Post-Aurora Rampage, few have heard about, when he says, local news accounts, which retailed the department's version of events, describe the crowd as, quote, unruly, and the protest as a near riot in which angry citizens encircled the officers and began throwing things, including bottles and possibly rocks. They don't even know. And the police claim there were several fires that had been started in trash cans. Of course, none of those claims have been corroborated by video evidence or eyewitnesses, nor have the police explained why they gunned somebody down who was unarmed and fleeing on foot. Why was he fleeing? I don't know. Maybe he was afraid. Maybe he was scared because this is the sixth officer-involved shooting in Anaheim, California just this year. And I don't know what you saw in that video, but I didn't see an angry, unruly mob just attacking police with bottles and rocks. What I saw was a terrified crowd screaming and trying to run for cover and protect their children from police officers shooting rubber bullets at them, which at close range can be lethal. And then you've got the mainstream media downplaying it all. You've got this article in the Digital Journal where they talk about how the canine officer that was released was an accidental release on at least one individual. They don't say that that individual was actually a baby in a stroller. Speaking of rights, Grigg finishes his story really well by saying, In the wake of the Aurora massacre, the public has been encouraged to believe that because of private gun ownership, every public gathering place can be transformed into the scene of a massacre. The Anaheim police rampage illustrates how quickly the state's armed enforcement case, which, according to gun control activists, should have a monopoly on our firearms, can turn any neighborhood into an urban war zone. Now, it should be noted that protests have now gone into a third day, and today Anaheim residents were set to gather in front of the city hall. And InfoWars will, of course, keep you updated as this story unfolds. And I think this goes really well into our quote of the day, which comes from Thomas Jefferson. And he says, "No free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny and government." The takeaway here is we have a right to protect ourselves. So back to you, Rob.
Thank you, Melissa. Now we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to have Webster Tarpley here on Skype in studio, and then we're going to have a special almost 1 hour Ask Alex. This is straight from the questions that you could ask at PlanetInfoWars.com, but that's only if you become a member at PlanetInfoWars.com. So we'll be right back after these short messages.
Have you been to InfoWarsShop.com lately? Express your inner patriot with these brand new InfoWars t-shirts. Say it loud with the InfoWars bullhorn shirt. Or educate the sheeple with the Bill of Rights shirt. Grope the public's mind with the TSA shirt. And with this shirt, you can let the dark side know of the Rebel Alliance's power. All available at InfoWarsShop.com.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
And we are back. It's Tuesday, July 24th. This is the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. And we're joined now by Webster Tarpley. He's featured in many films we've done, most notably Obama Deception and Fall of the Republic, where we detail a lot of Barack Obama's plans to go in, start wars in Africa, do more destabilization in the Middle East, and just basically continue the agenda of the globalists. And now for an update on Syria, what's going on there, especially with these new reports of chemical weapons coming out, we turn to Webster Griffin Tarpley. How you doing, sir?
Hi, Rob. Thank you very much.
So go. Give us the new big update on Syria.
Well, I think it's important to point out that we've had some very, very dramatic events, maybe a turning point in the Syrian conflict in the last week. And I think it's been widely misreported or ignored here in the West. If we can just go back a little bit. On July 8th, Hillary Clinton issued a warning to Syria saying, "You have very little time left to avoid a catastrophic assault on Syria that will lead to the smashing of the Syrian state, And in response to that, before too long, Russia had announced that they were sending 11 warships to the eastern Mediterranean as a kind of a counterbalance against that. But what Hillary Clinton had in mind, we finally saw last week. It's an attempt by NATO to orchestrate a perfect storm of converging attacks on Syria with the hope that they could bring about the collapse, the catastrophic collapse of the Assad government in the form of a coup d'etat without the need to have a full-scale NATO bombing campaign, NATO invasion. And the main headline is, so far, this has not worked. It has failed. And I'm maybe just tick these off. I can identify maybe seven prongs in the attack. First of all, what we found out in the Washington Post in the last couple of days is that the U.S. has been running a campaign, first of all, to get Iraq to prevent direct flights between Iran and Syria, because the U.S. says that's delivering various kinds of war material, sophisticated weapons, and so forth. So they turn the screws on Iraq and get some of these flights canceled. They also turn the screws on Egypt to prevent Iranian ships from going through the Suez Canal, which they have every right to do by a very important international treaty, so that they could deliver things to Syria that way. So that's number one. The second thing that was designed to converge last week was television fakery. This has been known since about the 11th of June. Thierry Meyssan, reporting from Damascus, reported that there was a plan by the U.S., NATO, the CIA, and the rest of them, the Israelis, to take over ArabSat and NileSat to prevent the Syrian state television and Adunia and Sham television. In other words, the pro-Syrian, sometimes pro-Assad television channels, to kick them off the air and then to replace them with fake broadcasts that were going to be generated by NATO, by the CIA. It also involved sound stages and outdoor sets of the kind we saw last year in Libya. Remember the green square, the fake green square that had been created in Doha, in Qatar? This time it's going to be, and they have them, downtown Damascus, downtown Aleppo, downtown Homs, and the presidential palace of Assad. So the plan was to take over these satellites and to replace them with fake channels, and then also to have CNN and the BBC and France 24 and the rest of them ready to go with programming that would back up on this this brainwashing stuff. The point, though, is that since this was reported so widely before the fact by Meyssan, I think I contributed something to it. By the time we got to this week, the Syrian information minister came out and said they thought they would surprise us by cutting off our television, which was done now in the last week. But it hasn't worked because they were ready for it, right? They blunted the psychological effect and they had workarounds. They said, if you can't get us on ArabSat and NileSat, try another satellite called Atlantic Bird, or you can try other possibilities. In other words, the Syrian channels were putting on public service announcements saying our station can go off the air at any time and you will essentially see zombie personnel telling you bad things about Assad and Syria. Don't believe it. This is something we know about. So that didn't pan out. Now, the third one was the attempted decapitation of the Syrian armed forces. And that was last Wednesday, this explosion in one of the main government office buildings in Syria that killed the defense minister, the deputy defense minister, the crisis management director, and then mortally wounded also the intelligence chief. Four important people were knocked out. Others were wounded. I don't believe that was a suicide bomb. I think that was a drone. That was a missile shot from a drone targeting a specific window and office complex to try to decapitate the Syrian forces. It is interesting that the main victim, the defense minister, Raja, is the top Christian in the Assad government. So there's an extra added venom coming from the Al-Qaeda fighters against anybody who's a Christian. And in Syria, you can be a Greek Orthodox, you can be a Maronite, you can be a Greek Catholic, a so-called Melkite. So,
well, let me stop you real quick, Webster. What's your evidence that this was a drone?
No evidence to speak of. It just that this story that it was an infiltrated suicide bomber, I think, stinks, because that's sort of, you know, Operation Splinter Factor, right? That's designed to make people paranoid, right? Is the guy next to me loyal or is he disloyal? But I think it's much more likely to have been a drone. Anyway, there's no proof. this entire assassination story is shrouded in mystery. And I would say, don't forget about the possibility of a cruise missile, of a drone, because the drones are flying all over the place. And why wouldn't they try to do this? Now, the point is, that was supposed to lead to the defection of army units. They said the 4th Armored Division is going to go to pieces. The Republican Guard is going to collapse. None of that happened. And instead, Assad kept control of the situation. He nominated replacements for these guys, and he's continued to sort of reshuffle the top leaders, right? And that's been going on up until today, still going on. So the integrity of the Syrian state apparatus has been maintained. So that was the third point. Fourth point is the U.S. and the British had prepared currency warfare. They were trying to organize a panic run on the Syrian currency to try to collapse it and increase the sense that it's the apocalyptic end of the world, right? So this stuff is going on. That also didn't work. The currency more or less resisted. And then maybe the most dramatic, swarming. It's been now reported that the Syrians have found fighters from Libya, from Egypt, from Jordan, just in the last couple of days. The swarming was another NATO airlift. This is the second time they've done it. It was first done a couple of months ago. But they brought in thousands upon thousands of fanatics, right? Al-Qaeda types, jihadis, mujahideen, unemployed people, mercenaries from all over the Middle East and well beyond to try to funnel them across the border into Syria just to create chaos and confusion. Now, these people are not really militarily trained. They're not organized into proper military units. Their armament is also maybe a little bit hit or miss. But the idea was that they could go in, take over large parts of Damascus, Aleppo, and these other places, and then hold them for long enough to make the Syrian leadership think that the world was coming to an end, and they had to run for the hills, right? It's a psychological warfare strategy, as I think we've pointed out. By the way, the kingpin of the psychology warfare side is Ben Rhodes, sitting in the Obama White House. This is the guy who orchestrated Obama's primary campaign. He's the boss of Favreau the last time around, the speechwriter. And the specialty of Ben Rhodes, and it was noted at the time, the Obama campaign wanted to make its opponents in the Democratic primaries think that their world was collapsing, that it was futile to resist Obama, that he was unstoppable, that the battle was over. You know, you might as well go home. That's what they tried to convince the Syrian people of, right? That they were already defeated, and they might as well just accept that fact. And it didn't work. So that's the swarming. Now, here's the thing with the swarming. Those foreign fighters, those low-level jihadis, went into Damascus and into Aleppo. In Damascus, they have been smashed. They've been wiped out. A lot of them have simply been exterminated, killed, wounded, missing. Hundreds killed, hundreds captured. So a significant part of the available manpower is now no longer there. In other words, there's a limited supply of these people, right? There's not an infinite number of people who are willing to undertake such a thing. And that is what's happening in Aleppo right now. But even the Washington Post today reports the rebels have lost the gains they made before the bombing in Damascus. They are now being mopped up. So for the Syrian military, it's Operation Mop Up. Now, the other thing is that whole operation, and this is my seventh point, extended into Iraq. Iraq seen as a possible supporter for Assad, under Iranian influence, generally speaking, sympathetic to Assad. So there was what you see today in the last 24 hours, a huge wave of bombings, 100 or more people killed, biggest upsurge since the U.S. forces left. A lot of them did anyway at the end of December. So all of that was supposed to cut off the possibility of getting help from Iraq, and that part has gone on. So you get the idea. All of these seven things, right? The cutting of the supply lines, the action in the United Nations that was vetoed by Russia and China, right? If that had gone the other way, it would have led to panic within Syria. The TV fakery, the drone, or I think drone assassinations to decapitate the government. The attempt to collapse the currency, the swarming of these foreign fighters was an absolutely key part of it. The fact that that extended to Iraq. Now, the result is that, again, a lot of those swarming fighters have been wiped out by the Syrian army, which is now methodically mopping up. So where does NATO go from here? They've given it their best shot. That was the perfect storm, and it didn't work. And the continuity of the Syrian government seems to be assured. At that point, they come up and they start whining about chemical weapons. This is obviously an attempt to build a pretext to have an invasion, because the point is you can't overthrow Syria in the way you could Libya. In Syria, the rebels, despite all the aid they've been given, they're absolutely unable to take and hold any city, any town, any part of the country. There just is no place where the rebels can say, this is our fortress and nobody else is coming in here. In Libya, of course, that was very different. The whole south of the country became a springboard for the attack on Gaddafi and Tripoli and the western part. So this adds up to a bad situation for NATO. Either they drop the whole thing or they escalate. And with the escalation, they run into Putin, because Putin is obviously the other side. Putin will retaliate. How will he retaliate? That nobody knows, but people in Washington, London are afraid to find out, because there are things that Putin can do that would make their lives, I think, very, very difficult. The other side of this is the retaliation, I take it, can be seen in some place like Saudi Arabia. A couple of days after the four top people in Damascus were killed by this bomb or rocket or cruise missile, we have a bomb going off at the comparable building in Saudi Arabia. In other words, the Saudi Arabian intelligence and military security headquarters gets bombed, and among the victims is the deputy to Prince Bandar, right? Prince Bandar, sort of below the radar these days, but obviously Prince Bandar being a very important figure in the destabilization of Syria. It is known that Bandar's representatives have taken part in the planning sessions for this television warfare, this video fakery attack, along with the U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, along with British and Israeli and other representatives. They've all been in the meetings, but Bandar is sort of the host for these things, and Bandar is the host for building these sets, right, sound stages inside Saudi Arabia, because apparently they're so big that Qatar is too small to hold them, or you can't build them and keep them a secret. So it looks like that was an attempt to kill Prince Bandar. And again, his deputy did succumb. So that's sort of the idea. One of the ways this could end, I think, is that if the U.S. and NATO keep pushing on Syria, this is destabilizing the whole region, and Saudi Arabia is far from being immune. If you get all this, you know, stuff about, you know, democracy and the revolution and so forth, that could turn out very badly for this reactionary feudal royal family of Saudi Arabia, Bandar and all the rest of them, right? The Sudairi clan, the Sudairi wing of the Saudi royal family, because there are things going on in Saudi Arabia that, of which we know very little. There are demonstrations. There are riots, there are protests that get almost no coverage, no reporting internationally. But they're going on and they're building up. And I would say watch Saudi Arabia in the next week or so. Will that hit on Bandar in his office, will that lead, is that the go for something big inside Saudi Arabia, which is just a guess coming from me at the present time. But at least the attempt to retaliate against Bandar, I think, is pretty clear that did occur.
Wow, that is a very high level analysis there that we've been receiving, because we're not getting that information here in the United States. We're getting Syria's got chemical weapons, they're going to use them if attacked, and it's the whole thing, you know, it's kind of the rehash of the Iraqi situation,
right?
And that's usually what we see from, you know, U.S. media.
There are a couple of other things that, might be of interest. The entire propaganda story of what's going on in Syria is now beginning to fall apart in certain parts of NATO Europe in particular. And that means, first of all, Germany. It's very interesting. In the last couple of days, we have some reports that the German intelligence, the Bundesnachrichtendienst of Pulach in Bavaria, they are now saying that the Syrian rebels are heavily, heavily Al-Qaeda. This was already known, but this finds in Germany an echo in some of the big press. The Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung is the biggest conservative paper in Germany. And already about a month ago, they put out a story saying the Hula massacre of late May, early June, the Hula massacre was not done by the Assad government. The Hula massacre was done by the rebels as a publicity stunt to have it blamed on Assad. So the Frankfurter Allgemeine, that's, I don't know, it's the New York Times or the London Times, or it's an equivalent of this. Now they have now been joined by the Springer press, and this means Die Welt of Hamburg, which is the number two conservative newspaper in Germany, and most interesting, Bild-Zeitung. And Bild-Zeitung is this tabloid that has 4 or 5 million readers. It may be certainly one of the biggest newspapers in Europe. And their line is now that the Syrian rebels kill people left and right to try to get a NATO intervention. So we're getting is the point where the central country of Europe, right, the biggest country in Western Europe, the entire NATO story has now collapsed, not from the left, but from these right-wing characters. So the view from Berlin is that they're afraid, they don't like the idea of Al-Qaeda taking over Syria, and well, they might be concerned about that. So there are other problems that are emerging for NATO. There's what could happen in Saudi Arabia, what could happen in Germany. If it happens in Germany, you might look for it to kick over into France or Italy or places like this. So I think all of that indicates that it's not a clear victory for NATO at all, and quite the contrary. Their perfect storm last week didn't gel. It just hasn't come together for them. And they're either going to have to escalate or find something else to do. But this is now obviously very dangerous. And in that regard, about 2 weeks ago, we had an article here in the Washington Post by David Ignatius. David Ignatius is a guy with connections to the State Department. And Ignatius was saying, the Saudis have canceled all leaves for their military personnel for the summer. He's saying that the CIA has people, on the ground in Turkey. This we know. He seemed to be saying that the CIA has people on the ground in Syria providing command, control, and communications, that the Israelis have gotten into the act by activating their agents along the Syrian-Israeli border, since Syria is a frontline state. But the other thing that the theme in this article is, are we in July 1914? July 1914 is kind of a theme in European literature. It's the last twilight of an illusion that there would be peace, and the world was drifting towards war. In those days, it took place sort of out of the public eye in secret messages among foreign ministries. But is July 2012 about to turn into that other July, just about 100 years ago, July 1914? Are we on the verge of some kind of major conflagration? And the answer to that is we could be, if these NATO people are crazy enough to try to say we don't care about the Security Council, to hell with Russia, to hell with China, to hell with everybody else. We're going to have the coalition of the willing, and we're going to start bombing. Now, they were ready to start bombing last week. If Russia and China had not vetoed that resolution, the bombing would have begun within hours. And at that point, that would have been a way to save this perfect storm. But we may be on the brink of that. We may be in July 1914.
Wow. Well, and we know what happens in World War I. Lots of people die, and the power shifts change a little bit. One thing is for certain, we did cover that Hulan massacre when it happened, and we covered the fact that it looked like that it was done by the rebels and not by Assad's troops. We were talking, we were showing video from eyewitnesses who were disputing everything that the American press was saying, by far and large. And then we also showed, clips of other massacres where people were pouring fake blood on themselves and they were carrying people away, or, and then fake funerals where guys would wake up in the middle of the funeral. And it's just an ongoing campaign there of disinformation. Not a hot, I mean, it's a hot war, but on top of it, there's this cloak of, you know, technology and media and social media emerging to muddy the waters and to not keep us, not tell us what's going on. How does this all, meld with Iran in the current situation, what's going on there?
Well, this is the main avenue of attack against Iran is obviously this, right? This is what's happening right now. If you want to have some kind of attack on Iran, then you've got to make sure that before you do that, you wipe out Syria. In other words, the goal of all of this is what Hillary Clinton said, to smash the Syrian state. And when you have these swarming terrorists, right? You're sending in criminal elements, convicts, God knows what, right? The dregs of the North Africa, the Mediterranean, the Middle East, out to Pakistan and the gates of China, right? You're sending them in. That's to destroy civilization as we've known it. So that's the goal of the U.S. and the idea would be to break up the Syrian state. You wouldn't have a single government. You'd have Kurdistan seceding. You'd have parts of it going with Turkey. You'd have other parts absorbed by Israel, most likely, the Kurds from as I said before. So it would be tremendous weakening. And then that's a bacillus that might find its way also into Iran. But if you want to go after Iran, you've got to deal with Syria first, because with Syria, you've got a continuous block, more or less, of Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, which is sympathetic to Iran and therefore to Syria under Maliki, and then Iran. So you've got to get in there and break that up. Otherwise, you're dealing with something that's much too big. You'll also be cutting off the supply routes to Hezbollah, depriving Hezbollah of their strategic depth. And I would point out that the Palestinians, Hamas, have essentially stabbed Syria in the back by saying they support the attack on Syria. But Hezbollah is hanging tough. They're supporting Assad, and as does Iran, and then the Russians and the Chinese. If you had rational people in Washington, they could say, all right, fine. The U.S. sphere of influence includes Tunisia, Libya now, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, all these places. But Syria belongs to the Russian-Chinese sphere, to the Shanghai area of influence, the Shanghai Cooperation Group. But you can see that the U.S., with Hillary Clinton and the rest of these people, they're so crazy that they can't imagine what would be normally be seen as a deal, right? A modus vivendi in diplomatic language, a way of getting along. They can't do this. So they've got to, go for the big attack. The other side of it is all this talk about chemical weapons, right? If suppose you're really worried about chemical weapons, here would be a constructive proposal. You could easily say, let Russia be invited by Syria to provide a couple of Spetsnaz brigades, and let them assure the security of the chemical weapons stocks so that nobody will come near them and they won't be moved and they won't be used. I'm sure that would be acceptable to at least to some people in the Syrian government, right? But it would also get Russia recognized as being the patron, the protective power of Syria. So here again, they're not concerned about chemical weapons. You could take care of the chemical weapons question quite easily, but they don't want to do that. They want the issue to beat the Russians over the head, or if necessary, to say, oh, sorry, we have to go outside the Security Council. We're going to have coalition of the willing. We're going to go back to Bush and Cheney, and we're going to have that. So, what you get out of this is that the U.S. ruling class, ruling elite, are collectively insane and totally incompetent. They have no idea what they're doing.
Well, that's what we've been saying all along. That sums it up there. They are collectively insane and incompetent, and they should be replaced. But that takes a lot more work than I think the American people are willing to do at this point.
You got to get some replacements, huh?
Exactly. Some replacements that aren't bought off. One final question. Let's just go over the stuff that happened in Colorado over the weekend with the shooter. We've been saying it's a false flag pretty much from day one. There's all kinds of evidence of other shooters, other people involved. I was reading an interview today where someone said the theater lights and the projector went off just as the attack started. You know, what does that tell you?
Well, I would point to two things. I mean, I think you can basically show that it's a fraud. It's a false flag for sure. First of all, the Patsy, there may be no proof that the Patsy ever did any of these things, right? Because the Patsy supposedly was wearing this gas mask the whole time. So who was it? Was it this guy that we've seen now in the courtroom or somebody else? So we don't know that. But the most interesting, and people can find this on my Twitter feed, Webster G. Tarpley on Twitter, there are two eyewitnesses from inside the theater who say right after they came out, there was at least one more perpetrator, a second shooter, if you will, some guy who rolled a tear gas grenade in among the crowd. So two. As soon as you have two, you're back in the world of Breivik when there were two, Major Hassan when there were two or three, Bobby Kennedy, Sirhan. There was obviously another shooter, Hinckley, probably another shooter. In other words, the psychotic Patsy cannot be relied on to do these things. You've got to have a technician. You've got to have somebody who's professionally trained to do that stuff.
Someone who's not drugged up on Vicodin.
All this stuff. So that, I think, is number one. The second thing is I don't know if I have the name of the medical school here, but maybe you have it there. A nearby medical school was drilling as an emergency exercise. A shooter goes wild in a theater and starts killing people.
Yeah, that was part of the University of Colorado.
It has a somewhat more complicated name, which I just don't have in front of me right now. But once you have those things, you can forget it, right? It's a false flag event. Why? Well, all kinds of reasons, right? To keep false flags alive, right? There's a big vested interest in that. To prepare for possible October surprises or other things, because if NATO doesn't get their way in regard to Syria, the last straw, right, the ultima ratio for NATO is always, if you can't get what you want, try a Gulf of Tonkin or try a false flag or try both. So something along those lines, I think, is the reason.
There you go. And we're going to leave it at that. Of course, we could talk for hours. You've got a huge mind, and you've traveled the world. You've even been to Syria and met with the people face-to-face. So you really know what's going on there. You really have your finger on the pulse.
Let me just say, people should realize, Syria is the most tolerant place in the Middle East, by far. And this is one of the reasons they're targeted. The U.S. and the British hate the idea that Syria is a place where all these cliches about, oh, they've hated each other for centuries, it's all baloney. The hotel I stayed in, the receptionist was a Maronite Christian woman. The head of the wait staff was a Sunni Muslim. On his staff, he had Alawites. He had Kurds. And, of course, you know, Damascus is where St. Paul converted to Christianity. There's St. Thomas's Gate in honor of St. Thomas, who went off then into the east, got all the way to India, according to some accounts. You can be an Alawite, you can be a Sunni Muslim, a Shiite Muslim, and a Christian. You can be a Maronite, you can be Greek Orthodox, you can be a Melkite, a Kurd. And all of these people were basically doing okay under Assad. And this is precisely what comes under attack. If you look at the Italian news agencies that deal with the Christian missions of the Vatican, they are warning that if these crazies, if the swarming terrorists take over Syria, there's going to be a massacre of Christians like you wouldn't believe. And I would call on people in the United States, if you call yourself an evangelical Christian, you better dump this policy. You better dump Hillary Clinton and Netanyahu and Obama and Romney, because they all agree. Romney puts himself as the guy who wants more. He wants more attacks and sooner than Obama's willing to do. If you support this policy against Syria, you are part of a strategy of genocide against the Christian minority in Syria, against the Alawites, and so forth, right? The slogan that's coming from these crazy mouthpieces, and that includes cable television from Saudi Arabia, right? The Wahhabite cable TV world is also part of this attack. They say, drive out the Christians, send the Christians to Beirut and get them out, right? Ship them out of the Middle East and kill all the Alawites. So a massacre between Christians and Alawites. It's probably 30-35% of the whole population. Think of it, 35% of 20 million. You're getting into pretty heavy duty genocide. So if you're an evangelical Christian, you cannot be a part of this.
I totally agree. And that's the same thing that happened in Libya. As soon as they kicked out Gaddafi and the rest, they started murdering all the black Africans.
And in Iraq, it's the same thing. It happens the same place, all over the place. And if it happens in Syria, then Lebanon, right? Lebanon has a pretty big Christian community, right? And, General Aoun, Michel Aoun is traditionally the leader of that group. What you have in Lebanon is a Christian Shiite alliance. In other words, General Aoun is allied with Hezbollah against the puppet regime of Rafiq Hariri, or the Hariri, the current Hariri. So take a look at that. Again, if you think you're a Christian evangelical, examine the reasons why a very devout Christian like General Aoun makes a deal with Nasrallah of Hezbollah, and you'll see that the whole Middle East is absolutely not what anybody told you, but it's completely different.
Yeah, they do that because they realize they have to live together, and they've decided, well, this is better than killing each other, and that's where
sure.
we should be going.
And there's a lot more. I mean, there's a positive, there's a mutual interest, which is positive. One of the things they say is we have to defend ourselves against the Israelis.
Right. Well, we're going to leave it at that. Webster, thanks for coming on today and offering us your perspective, and we will talk to you soon.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. You have a good one. Well, and usually that's when I say that's our show for today, but we're going to have a special over 50-minute version of Ask Alex, and this is through Planet InfoWars, where you can actually join a group, ask your questions to Alex. He sits in there with Christy Hightower, and he answers pretty much all the questions. And some of them are short, about 20 minutes, and some are long, about 50 minutes. So this is a 50-minute one coming up now. If you're not a member of PrisonPlanet.tv, if you are watching this on YouTube, please consider being a member and supporting us. This is the only way we're funded. We're not funded by George Soros, MSNBC, the military-industrial complex. Any of those entities are not our sugar daddies. We are solely funded by viewers and supporters like you out there. So please consider getting a membership. We have a 15-day free trial. And also become a member of Planet InfoWars. It's our new social network. That's free to join. You can get on there. You can meet like-minded people around the area. We have people writing articles and submitting those. So it's just a great way to get the word out and meet like-minded people, and because that's what it's all about. We have to stick together in these times. And just as Webster Tarpley was alluding to, the Christians and the Shiites are learning how to work together because they have to. They decided that killing each other isn't going to work. But when we let these rogue, radical, criminal groups in, that's when they start picking out one group that they don't like and massacring them. And we've seen it happen before, and it will happen again. So with that, we go to Ask Alex, and that'll be the end of our show. And we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Hi, welcome. I'm Christy Hightower from the Planet InfoWars Ask Alex group. I'm here with Alex Jones. We're finishing the last part of the marathon set of questions. So we're going to start off where we left off, which is question 24.
So I got through about half of them last time.
Right.
We've got a hurry today. So yep. 26 questions in 20 minutes.
You got it. Tick, tick, tock. Okay. Alex, what are your thoughts on the NSTIC program? Is it dangerous? Is it as dangerous as I think? And biometric access for the internet, is that required?
That's what governments all over are pushing for, to tax you, not just track you. and not just frame you, but also tax you. And then they're saying if you're not a good little globalist, they're going to ban your internet ID and kick you off the web or blacklist you. And the architecture under SOPA and ACTA and others has been where there's no judge or jury. They just decide you're engaging in hate speech or you're engaging in copyright infringement or you're engaging in whatever the case is. And then you're just banned and blacklisted from the web. This is a very, very dangerous authoritarian move, especially in the 21st century. I mean, this is the future is the internet. So it's basically a human
especially with all the activist movements. And, I mean, you need to be able to talk to the people you're...
Well, that's right. The system wants to use the internet to try to create its own revolutions and steer things. Mm-hmm. But they're not winning. They're losing. They helped build what is the web today. But the people are what brought all this ingenuity to it and built it up.
Absolutely.
And so the establishment, the man, is really rethinking the fact that they thought they could dominate the internet. Too late. Genie out of the bottle.
This comes to you from Max, and he says, hey, Alex, please cover the Samson option on the show. I don't know if you know anything about the Samson option.
Well, I know that, again, I am not given these questions beforehand. Last week she had 50 questions, only got to 24 of them or so, and I have not looked at these. I believe the Samson option from memory is Israel nuking all of its neighbors if it's attacked. And then they've also called some of the others the Samson option of, you know, to go ahead and just nuke the whole world and the elite goes underground. But when I can't remember something exactly, put a star, as we should on all the stuff we've starred.
Yeah.
Just do a piece on that where you go and say, is this what you remember?
Awesome.
Because, you
okay.
know,
I can do that.
Somebody called in today about a CFR document and said the name. I said, that's CFR document, isn't it? They said, yeah. And then once they said yes, then I could remember that I was accurately thinking of the right federal takeover of society. But I mean, what do they say the Samson option is?
They didn't really. I think they just wanted you to elaborate.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to have a special edition where we go back to these questions.
I mean, I could Google it. You know what? I've just got to see right now. I mean, I know I said this is a hurry, but I'm on the. I mean, it's Israel nuking everybody.
Samson option.
Very exciting. Kind of has the Jeopardy sound. Dee, 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 dee. Yeah, there it is. It's the Samson option is a term used by various commentators to describe Israel's alleged deterrent strategy of massive retaliation with nuclear weapons as a last resort. Oh, Israel doesn't admit they have nukes, so I guess they don't.
Right.
And the government doesn't admit chemtrailing, so it doesn't exist. No, Israel has 400 nuclear weapons at least.
I can't see you. You can't see me.
Their own people have said so. commentators also have employed the term in reference to situations where non-nuclear, non-Israel actors such as Saddam Hussein, Yasser Arafat, or Hezbollah have been threatened conventional weapons retaliation. Yeah, I mean, Samson brought the whole temple down. You know the story. Okay.
Yeah.
I was correct, but I'm not, you know, you're just sure of everything. I always have to double check. Okay, go ahead.
Well, one quick thing. I feel like Max probably could do that, and I'm just sure that maybe we'll hit it back with some other facts that you've got.
Max could do what?
The guy that asked the question on the Samson.
Oh, but I mean, what is his specific question? Hold on one second. We're going to keep rolling. My wife is calling. We'll do this on air now, unedited. Hey, honey, how you doing? I am taping something. I'm taping the Ask Alex. I'll be done in about 15 minutes. Can I call you back or is it an emergency? Yeah, go eat without me. I'm going to have to stay late. I love you. Bye. There you go. Multitasking. This is how hard we work here. Most media outlets like one thing a week, not us. We're just continuing.
Nope.
In fact, Chris, can I have a glass of water, please? Thank you.
No problem.
All right, let's continue. I already had too many of those.
Okay.
InfoWarsTeam.com.
Yeah,
sorry.
Back InfoWars. Brianna asks you, she says, hey, Alex, can you cover RFID implementation in the Obamacare bill and discuss if there's anything about non-vaccinating, too?
Okay. Look, everybody freaked out about a section in the legislation. It's a terrible bill that said, oh my gosh, it funds putting chips in us. And it does fund all these medicalized chips and chips in the new pills that are coming out and things. So that is there. That is where medicine's going. And chips wouldn't be bad to make a blind person see. The problem is all tech they put out, they admit, they make you pay for it. Trojan horse back doors are put in.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was some brain chip to stop Parkinson's or a brain chip to, you know, heal the blind, I'm all for it. The problem is for buying and selling, the establishment is eugenicist-based. They're evil by any culture's yardstick. So you can't trust any of the tech because the big tech companies are so wildly corrupt.
Yeah.
That's why we should go open source, try to support small companies. But small companies don't make a Canon camera with a color chip that big that gives people total high-def look of a $200,000 movie camera just 10 years ago.
Right.
So I can't support a mom and pop here. I mean, now these Canons come out with GPS to mark where you're at. And in the future, the Sony ones, they're saying you won't have a choice. It's going to put on the tape the chip everywhere we've been. Why? Even if we want it turned off. Jacobson, what do you say to that? That's it. They are mapping the entire world, and then they can track it with real-time NSA. Exactly. Next question.
And pen you down later.
Rob, if you want, you can go wide shot, too, and go check that work you got. We're multitasking. Go ahead.
This is Frito. This is coming from Fritomite, and he says that he's an EMS and a firefighter, and they've been bombarded with disaster drills and mass casualty incident training more and more. And he goes, I know they're prepping us for something. All the major and even smaller EMS and fire services are becoming more and more federalized with new regulations, as well as becoming a legal minefield for emergency workers. They're requiring new vaccines to be taken by healthcare and emergency workers. So what do you say to that? Like,
they use all these disaster drills just to prime federal control. And then the next phase is, by the way, people that don't like the government are terrorists. That's the real phase of all of this. And they're telling the police there will be martial law in October. I've confirmed that from all over the country. I'm not saying that. They do it to create a fear and go, okay, now take the shot. They tried to get police, firefighters, and other responders, 14 million of them, first responders, nurses, you name it, under the emergency, what's the exact name? It's funny with memory here. The Emergency Centers Establishment Act is what always pops in my head, but that's only 3 years old. They tried to do that with it's so hard to sit there and come up with the exact name. It was in 2002. They ordered them to do it. And, only a few thousand did it. 95%+ said no. The LA Times reported it was 14 million first responders, and then almost all of them said no. And it was the Health States Emergency Powers Act. That's almost the name. The point is that people look all this up for yourself. Emergency Centers Establishment Act, the Health Emergency. It's one of those deals.
I'm checking up on that one.
I'm just going to look it up right now. It's driving me absolutely insane. This will end up being 10 hours long. Well, I tell you, this is going to be one crazy episode here. The States Health Emergency Powers Act. The Model States Health Emergency Powers Act. You just looked that up for me, didn't you?
Beautiful.
Maybe we can get you involved, Chris, with a terminal typing right here like we do live on the air.
It'd be beautiful.
So you guys are asking me questions, and then I'm getting to the point where I can't even... what was the question to begin with?
Essentially, he's an EMS and a firefighter, and they're requiring them to take...
Yeah, they use all this fear-mongering. First, they said, it's the law, you must take anthrax and smallpox shots. And some cops took it and dropped dead, and then people were like, you know what, I'm not going to take that. They tried to make the military take it. They refused. There were mutinies. And then they had that particular move in 2002, but it failed. So now they're just back doing it again. Just because they say there's going to be martial law in October doesn't mean there's going to be. But I'll tell you this, I've never seen them hyping it so much. Christy, what do you think's going on?
I genuinely don't know. I mean, I'm not in a position to really speak. Right now I'm just taking in everything I learned. Like, I'm just taking it all in. I do have a question, kind of an extension of that. Martial law being hyped in October, I mean, I've heard a lot about it, but I've, you know, the tanks on the street in St. Louis, but where have you heard all of this from?
I heard it from our London media mole, okay, who turned out to be a famous TV host and filmmaker before he went public. He infiltrated the Olympics of security, said they're saying after the Olympics, it's going to be something that changes the world forever. That they heard, you know, stuff like October.
Mm-hmm.
I've just got a lot of other sources. We've had countless police call in. I talked to a police officer in Central Texas. I'll just leave it at that. Who told, in uniform, who told me they're being told to get ready for October, late November, October. Again, that doesn't mean anything's going to happen. They've got to have a lot of these programs ready.
Mm-hmm.
Military's being told they've got to be ready for something big by October.
Mm-hmm.
October, November is the election. October, surprise, if Obama and his controllers decides to try to pull something, then that's the zone for an October surprise.
That makes sense.
But it doesn't mean when the New York Times comes out and says, Jones said there'd be martial law in October.
Yeah.
Talking about it may stop it, or they may have never have been planning it to begin with. The point is, the more and more they admit they're getting ready for civil emergency, troops on the street. That's not debated. I mean, they're going to call it martial law. What's the next question?
The next question is actually from Soft DMC, and they say, I live in a tiny 300 square mile island in Singapore, and that's completely built up. I have nowhere to retreat to where if, you know, stuff hits the fan, I can't expect neighboring countries to take 5 million people. So is there any advice you have? Like, what am I supposed to do?
I have never been to Singapore, but I know that it is a globalist model where they arrest you if you drop chewing gum on the ground,
mm-hmm.
or they cane you if you drop stuff on the street. And some can argue that's law and order. But it's more than that. You know, they arrest and go after media that criticize the government.
Crazy bathroom laws. I mean,
oh, yeah, they have cameras in the bathrooms.
Yeah.
And they sue for slander and libel. They have the worst laws on in the world. Anybody that criticizes them, even internationally. So I'm not getting anywhere near Singapore. But the word is it's a place for elites. And then they bring you there. It's very clean, you know, very nice. But they are coming after you if you've got a crooked toenail. But then meanwhile, the multinational, I mean, I was told by a high-level Republican who was there as a computer company owner. He was going to come on the air. They chickened out. I've known the guy for like 16 years. And he said that they test in Singapore with in different neighborhoods, different drugs in the water supply. I mean, that's how advanced Singapore is like a test zone.
Wow.
And it took on kind of the British model.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that started it all was from China and claimed he was anti-authoritarian, but it's really just created a China. The communist Chinese are looking at Singapore for their new model of oppression. It's like a hyper type of depression. And I think they call the guy that founded the country the Grand Architect or something. I mean, it's super creepy.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
I mean, look, I'm not going to say don't live in Singapore because I don't think I mean, even though I've studied it quite a bit, I don't think I am that jazzed up, you know, to the point, tell me the right word, to be able to sit there and tell somebody that Singapore is a bad place.
So they're just going to have to stick on the island.
Yeah, next question. My wife sent me a text of a news article, and I'm addicted to seeing what it is.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't understand.
What's the question you read about that?
Oh, they're having a vote about should they ban our guns after the shooting in Colorado.
Ugh.
Unbelievable.
No kidding.
Next question.
The next question comes to you, and it's Vinificus. Sorry, I can't pronounce your display name right.
This is all for PlanetInfoWars.com, the Ask Alex area.
I assure you I can read. Hey, Alex, have you thought about printing a geopolitical dictionary of terms with a brief description and example, pictures perhaps, of the term concerned? For example, false flag, counterintelligence program, etc. This way you could raise, you could put it in your store, essentially. But I think that's actually kind of a good idea.
Yeah, we've thought about dictionaries, uh-huh. encyclopedias, like a real history of the world.
Right.
I've been offered countless book deals. And
not enough time. And
I did one, and then the ghostwriters, two different ones, would not really put down on paper what I'd said. It was bizarre.
Hmm.
So I just said, I'm not publishing this book.
Yeah.
They weren't bad people. But it just didn't turn out to be what I'd said.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I've had some of the biggest publishers in the country come and offer me deals, and I just don't trust them.
Yeah.
Because
they'll manipulate your words and put your name
on. They basically, yeah. I mean, and, yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a great idea. I definitely need to do video tutorials where we cover maybe, you know, part one, defining the New World Order, part two, defining the New World Order, part three, or, and then really break down from our research how the real world works. It's a great idea.
That's a great idea, absolutely. And tweet them out. Put them on Facebook, perhaps. You can check it out on Planet Infowars. The next question is from Arik, and he says, Alex, do you consider TWA Flight 800 to be a false flag event?
I consider it to be an assassination of a bunch of top Egyptian military brass that were on board the aircraft. Remember, every few years, a big Egyptian aircraft full of military brass flying back from the U.S. or England crashes in the Mediterranean, crashes in the Atlantic. I mean, they really are, the globalists are trying to make sure Egypt stays in line with them, and I guess they invite them over and offer to pay them off. And if that crop doesn't take the offer, they're all dead. Without getting into the whole diatribe, TWA Flight 800 was totally shot down by a continuous rod warhead. Over 800 witnesses saw it, including over 100 that were on Navy ships and in helicopters. There was a drill out there that night, and they used it as a pretext to blow the aircraft out of the sky. Reporters broke in and got samples of the aircraft. Remember, they reconstructed it and had the residue of high explosives on it. It was blown up, continuous rod warhead. And General Parton and others, who was the former head of Air Force Weapons Development, was able to look at it and tell what it was.
Wow.
And basically, it's just a big sabot. They just, big old metal rod, they just shoot right through an aircraft. That's the way to get them.
So they're probably really concerned about all of the uprisings in Egypt and all of that then, blowing up there.
Well, yeah, they were trying to get that going. Mm-hmm. They don't want any mainline governments who just want to have a country and have tourism, people go to college and be happy. They put the radical Shiites or Sunnis in everywhere. They created Saudi Arabia, they created Al-Qaeda, they created all these people. That's why they're putting Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria now.
Yeah. Accentuate the radicals there.
Well, yeah, the most radical. I mean, look, if your country's got women going to college and not wearing burqas, you're dead. Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the end of it. But then they think we're so stupid, we've got to give up all of our rights because Al-Qaeda may be under the table, Christy. In fact, have you checked?
Actually, I was just doing that. I mean.
No, I mean, you need to check right now.
I'm scared.
But they think we're so dumb. They run Al-Qaeda against Syria, against Libya, against Iran, against the Serbs, against the Russians.
All the while funding them.
And then brag.
Yeah.
And then, oh, but these Al-Qaeda that all trained at military bases, they didn't really work for us. Oh, and Amiral Alaki, he was at the Pentagon. Oh, and all these other guys were. And Mutallah was got on the plane by the government, underwear bomber. But never mind, Christy. Everything's fine. Isn't Al-Qaeda scary?
We just need a patsy. That's all we're looking for. Ramblin' Man asks you, what do you think about Steve Quayle and Hawk, who say evil is taking over and basically we have no hope and even gun owners will not even slow them down?
Well, I think Steve's a really interesting guy, and so much of what I'd hear him talk about 15 years ago that I just thought was crazy has a lot of it's turned out to be true. And I think he's a really well-meaning, good guy who has been a man before his time in many cases.
Do you think this is the case, then?
I didn't hear him say that. And I know he knows there's always hope through Christ, and people are really waking up. You know, all this bad's happening, but people are also really waking up. And I think the idea that, you know, nothing can stop it and that's the end of it, I mean, I've got children. I'm never going to have that view. And people always, you know, get despondent and think everything's over. It's always darkest for the dawn. I mean, I'm not saying the person's lying, but I should probably contact Steve and see if he's really saying that.
What do you think about guns? This is kind of off topic. What do you think about guns in relation to nuclear bombs? I mean, if you have a gun, it's not going to stop someone from nuking your country.
Is that their question?
No, I'm sorry. It's totally my...
We're going to have Christy ask you, Alex.
My question.
No, but people always say, oh, my God, guns, how are you going to fight helicopters? You don't go out with your gun and fight a helicopter. You don't go out and look for it.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to put you in a concentration camp. All over Germany and Poland, everywhere the Nazis went, they would show up and tell the Jews, show up here. They'd show up orderly with their hats and their stuff, and here's my money, here's my kids. Okay, we're going to break you up, put you in a truck, take you away. I mean, I'm not going to do that. One place in the Warsaw Ghetto, like a couple thousand people, a couple thousand Jews resisted. They killed thousands of Nazis, something like 7-1 they killed. They held out for almost, you know, 3 or 4 months. Wow. They had to send in divisions in there just because they had some guns and fought back. I mean, the Germans had big tanks and had Stukas bombing the buildings. They just stayed in the basements, waited, and killed people when they came to get them.
So it's tactics at that point.
The point is, they just said, well, they're going to kill us anyways. Mm-hmm. Might as well just kill some. I mean, it gets down to that point of, They can't even get our guns and ban them because they know people aren't going to turn them in. A certain percentage are going to fight. That's where they hold back. The founders put that in place. Like, the vampires are all around us. If you can see them politically, they're all right there. They're invisible. You throw dust up, you can suddenly see them. They're all right there. But the guns, the free speech, the fact that we're fighting, that we're not losing hope, that's holding them back. The fact that they commit an atrocity, like, I believe this was a false flag. It has all the signs. I mean, it's over the top. The fact that they did all of that and still are having to automatically still back off and having to go to the UN to try to ban our guns. I mean, we're not giving up. And I'm not somebody who shoots my mouth off about violence, but here's the deal. Me nor my wife or my children, if Army trucks come around and say, you're going to the FEMA camp or we've got shots for you, we're not doing it.
Right.
And, you know, that's the point of, well, it's been nice, being here. But I ain't going alone. Okay, nobody's taking my kids, none of it. Hey, you're going to have to fight for my children. And nowadays, in a nation of cowards, I guess that's a radical statement. I'm not going to a death camp. I'm supposed to just get my hat and, like, run down into the pit to get shot. Have you seen all those film footage of the naked women stripping off because they were going to recycle their clothes and stuff? And they got their babies, and they go in there and get shot? Or, like, you see one group run down in, and they shoot them, and then another group, like, the guy has the hat in his hand, and he wants that approval from the guy in the black uniform, so he kind of, oh, thank you, sir. And if I'm a tough guy or radical, because, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's real simple. I mean, if I went in my garage, it's happened before, and there's a big old bull raccoon over there, I mean, they can kill full-grown pit bulls. I mean, they're that tough. They jump on their head and, you know, bite their eyes out and try to put them in water. I mean, they're really tough. But the point is, it's a little bitty raccoon. If I walk in my garage and there's one and it goes, you know, I'm just going to go back in the house because let me tell you, I mean, I can either go in there and shoot them or I'm not going to try to find them. The thing probably only weighs 25 pounds, but it will tear your, I mean, it will tear you apart. I mean, snapping so fast, you'll have bites all over you. And so we need to look like wolverines or raccoons. Mm-hmm. We need to stop thinking of ourselves as these wimps. Mm-hmm. A bunch of criminals that have taken over the country and bombed Oklahoma City and staged Fast and Furious think they're going to have some Soviet New World Order takeover, re-education camp operation. Then we're not starting the fight. We're here. You come and start a fight with me, you're going to get one right back. I mean, I'm already point blank attacking them with words. Mm-hmm. And before the shooting starts, that's the most powerful weapon, Kristen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm right up front like I've done my whole life, just pounding these people right in the face because they're attacking us with their words, with their disinfo, their lies. My weapon's the truth. It's a lot more powerful.
Wasn't it in the war, the book of, is that, oh my goodness, I just lost my train of thought. Essentially, if you have to shoot first, you've already lost. Isn't that the concept of that?
Sure, until it starts. And then once they shoot first, you always shoot first. You understand the difference?
If
they start the war, they start the war. That doesn't mean you always shoot second after it starts.
Okay.
You always shoot first once it starts. You never shoot first until it starts.
Got it.
Then you choose the time, the place.
There you go. Under your own. Got it. Well, the next one comes to you from Jewel, and she says, a few months ago you had Stuart Rhodes on, and he mentioned he was going to attend a meeting with state governors. Have you heard anything back?
No, we should get Stuart Rhodes back on.
Okay, done. Check that one off. And
we should get Stuart Rhodes on the next few days.
Yeah, that'd be good. The next one is from
how many questions?
Nivik.
Rob, you've got to go edit the other piece for the news
how
tonight.
How much time do we have?
Do a wide shot. Run on out and check on that. Good job. And leave this all in. Don't even edit this out. You'll get to see all the behind the scenes here. Christy, continue.
The next one comes to you from Nevik, and he says, my question is, how do you feel about the approaching world war, and how will it affect the freedom movement here in America and globally?
Say that again?
There's a little more to that, but essentially he's asking, he thinks there's an approaching World War III, and how would that affect our freedom movement here?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. They always get these wars going. Show that people say, well, it's patriotic. We didn't want to get in the war, but we've got to get behind it now.
Yeah, of course.
And they're creeping towards that with Russia, with China even. People say, well, do you like Russia and China? No, I don't live there. They're authoritarian too, but I'm run by foreign banks who want to get me into this war so they can get us all in debt to them. I don't want to go to the party.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a war with the cops, with the military, with anybody. You're just not shooting me up with cancer viruses or taking me to a FEMA camp. Don't tread on me. It's like, I'm not looking for trouble,
right. But
if you think you're going to walk all over me, it ain't happening.
My fear is that it's happening so slowly, nobody's paying attention. I mean,
they're putting Russian special forces into Syria, and they're battling U.S. special forces and NATO forces from NATO countries right now in Damascus.
As we speak?
Yeah, I mean, there were U.S. troops killed and mercenaries when they attacked the Russian-held enclave of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. back in 2008.
I want you to say that a little faster. That was good.
Why?
Because it just sounds very hard to pronounce quickly. Sorry, not a funny topic. C4 Stay Away and Kathy, both users, kind of asked a similar question. They said, can you give some advice on how to most effectively introduce someone who's never given a thought to a world so turned upside down? Basically, where do you start? You know, people, you try to tell them something. What's a good way to kind of wake them up?
I shot a piece for the Nightly News that Aaron's about to do live in there. We get up close to 7 here. That's why Jacobson's in there with my piece for the news, getting it ready right now.
Right, I saw you doing it earlier.
And I just went over the fact that, hey, the radiation was 5 to 8 times higher than they said. They ordered them to lie about it. We told you, you know, a year and 3-4 months ago when Fukushima happened. Because there were scientists that went in with their own meters and said it. I mean, people were dying for the radiation. It was so high.
Yeah.
I mean, we know the type of reactors. We know their load. We know some completely melted down, bigger than Chernobyl. They lied.
Yeah.
And that stuff's blowing right at us. Now they admit the fish, everything. It's really hit Alaska hard, and it's causing a nightmare there. You know, it turns out that Joe Paterno, of course he knew it at Penn State about that.
I don't see how you couldn't.
The point is,
people lie.
Let me tell you, it's not just about knowing.
Yeah.
People are naive about how evil people crave power and crave getting into positions so they can get away with it all. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a normal person, you know, just wants to have a good, stable life and take care of their family and doesn't cheat on their wife or their husband because they're trying to be good people. A normal person doesn't cheat somebody in business because they want them to do good. And they've got pride in themselves that they do a good business and they work hard and they deserve the money they made. But more and more people think, no, you get ahead. That's stupid, you know, to not cheat on your family. That's stupid to not blah, blah, blah. But then it goes beyond that. These evil people like doing things that normal people don't even ever think about. And so good people are like blind to evil. We just can't believe it. Something's actually happening.
You don't want to believe that, because if it does, it crumbles your whole reality.
Yeah, but our whole reality is going to crumble. See, there's always good running parallel to evil, and evil's supposed to be a little bitty piece of things, you know, in a healthy society. You want to try to get rid of all of it, but it's always going to be there. And then good's this big wide band, you know, the stream, and next to it's this evil river. Well, they told us there is no good and evil, joined that evil into the mainstream, and then infected it all where the whole stream's going dark. And now they're saying people that like freedom and don't trust big government, they're the bad ones. People that like the family, they're the bad ones. People that want to be honorable, they're just stupid schmucks. They don't know how to get ahead. And so they sell all these people that, you know, I'm being corrupt is the way to get ahead. So they get more and more corrupt, thinking, I would have got ahead if I'd have been more corrupt. Yeah. And pretty soon the business dries up, the society collapses. The globalists know this. They're imploding society so they can be in control of it. The way to do good in business is being honest and people being, you know, having a name they can trust you. The way to do good in life is to, you know, not live in the fast lane, and be focused. But they sell people on, oh no, you're missing out because you're not doing this. You're missing out because, you know, you're not involved in all this. And this is what you call a fallen society. They gave us the disease of corruption and evil. Not that any of us are perfect. To where we don't even recognize what's good or bad anymore, so we could be brought down, so we could be spiritually blinded. And if atheists out there are offended by saying spiritual, whatever, basic discernment. Because you know what? I don't see the atheist out there confronting the eugenics and the globalists and the New World Order. I see you guys attacking us that stand up against it. And that's not fair to put you all in one basket. I also see most of the mainline churches Bible thumping and being a bunch of Pharisees up on the mountain saying they're better than everybody. All I know is the world's in a crisis. Great change is taking place. And you better be on the side of good, ladies and gentlemen, because going along with evil does not get you ahead.
All right. You asked how many questions we've got. 15. Can we make them fast, you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. This is from Robert. It's kind of an extension of the last question. It says, what woke you up? Is there a specific event?
No. It was a collection of things and just common sense. And then seeing police deal the drugs where I lived in Dallas. And then get on the news talking about how they were fighting drugs and use it to shake down people that were buying drugs that they didn't buy from them.
Supply and demand, I suppose. The next one's from George, and he says, Alex, I would really like to stop participating in the population reduction agent known as cigarettes. We touched on this, I think, the last portion, too, but he asks what worked for you personally, just kind of a self-encouragement.
I've just got tired of feeling like crap. And I've quit smoking for 4 years, 2 years, 1 year. I mean, I've always gone off and on. And always just starts with that cigarette at a bar, out having dinner with friends, and then, buy a pack going home. And now it's been over a year since I've had one. And I just no more chewing tobacco, no more cigars, no more any of it. And I finally had that thing happen that happened a few other times where I quit for 4 years once, for 2 years another time. It stinks to me.
Yeah.
So something happened where it just clicked. And I realized this is just tobacco. They're putting all these additives and stuff in. So just decide. It's not like you're fighting to not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just decide that you don't want to, die 20 years early and you want to be there for your children.
Yeah. Well, I actually took it up a little bit in college, and my way of getting over it was that every time I wanted a cigarette, I would go for a run. So I just got tired of running, so I didn't want a cigarette.
Well, that's what they say. They say you've got to replace bad habits with good.
Yeah, exactly. Make it like a conscious effort there. The next one is from I See the Future, and it says, Alex, have you noticed that right after the Supreme Court hands all this free money to Big Pharma, that all of a sudden Big Pharma will begin to settle out of court on many drugs and illegal practices that they've charged with your tax money, of course?
That's a good question. What was the first part?
The Supreme Court hands all the free money to Big Pharma, and then all of a sudden Big Pharma turns around and...
Yeah, the Supreme Court took what Big Pharma wrote, and they bragged they did the health care plan, which is trillions of dollars over the next decade. And then, yes, now they're settling because it's just coming out. All their whistleblowers are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really what's going on, is that the whistleblowers, it's so immoral what's happening. They're all coming out and speaking out. It's like in Europe and the U.S., it turned out for 20 years they've been setting and rigging the interest rates. Well, no kidding. To rip people off. They've made trillions conservatively. That's admitted. They're paying a $22 billion fine. So it's kind of like when they caught Wells Fargo and Wachovia laundering 300 plus billion in drug money a few years ago. It was in the news. They paid a $115 million fine. Well, if it was $376 billion, what is $100
million? 10% of that, I mean.
Well, it's I think it came out to it was a very low percent.
Yeah.
I don't think it was 10%. If I got to do the math again, I think it was like 3% or something, but I'm going from memory.
$300 billion roughly?
Yeah.
$3 billion is 1%. So what would you say it was a couple? Oh, man.
It was $376 billion.
Okay.
People just type in, banks laundered $376 billion, Bloomberg AP will come up.
Okay.
It's $376 billion, and they paid, I think it was $110 or $115 million. Just say $110 million fine.
Wow.
So what's that?
Well,
$110 million divided into $376
billion. Jesus, I don't even know. I can't even. I need a calculator.
The point is,
it's a minuscule amount.
We've done it before.
Yeah, minuscule.
So the issue here is they've got a license to kill and steal. And so even if some of the crooks aren't totally evil, they're going to give way to even worse and worse people. That's how once corruption starts, it's a wedge, and they blow it open for everybody.
Yeah.
And then now the very worst of the worst are in there, like Stalin. They get more and more power, and no one can resist them anymore. And so whatever their darkest nightmare is and all their servants' dreams are, that is turned loose.
That
sound fun?
No, absolutely not. It sounds horrific. The next one's from Hikes a Lot, and he says, Alex, will illegal aliens be exempt from paying for the new health care tax?
But yes, they've already announced they're exempt, and they're going to have it all free until the country's fully bankrupt. The job is bankrupt the country because they're loaning us all fiat money to begin with. They want real assets.
So then bankrupt the country, and, I mean, Greece is already going through a bailout. Spain's going through a potential
bailout. Three or four bailouts. I mean, they always get more.
Stuff. Then if everybody's broke, then there's just this very, very, very elite, and that's it?
Who have written the laws where they're tax exempt with hundreds of trillions of dollars offshore.
Right.
And so then they can come back and buy it all up.
So essentially they just want everybody to collapse, and then they get to just have America becomes their own personal island.
Yeah, just type in Boss Hog on Banking on YouTube, and he'll explain it.
I want to watch that.
Boss Hog on Banking. He's explaining it to Roscoe. And Roscoe's like, boss, why do you want to loan them money when they ain't got it to pay it back for the carnival? He goes, that's easy, Roscoe. What you do is you don't loan money to people when they don't have money.
He says, that's what you think. No, you loan people money when they don't have it, because then you got the promissory note signed and you get all their property. And then Roscoe's like, oh, that sounds good, boss. I'm not doing a very good imitation here because I'm tired. But
we'll just skip around all our movies here.
That wasn't the best imitation of...
It was good. I think it was good. I think they were going to close up on that one, too. Imagine asks you, what did you mean when you said, I should create another movie about 9/11? Is there something that would blow it even more open?
Well, I've made 4 films concerning the inside job that was 9/11, this catastrophic, catalyzing event meant to launch us into this new dark age of tyranny. In PNAC's own words, Dick Cheney and others' own words, a year before 9/11, they wrote about how they wanted a Pearl Harbor event to do all this false flag, just pure evil. They also talk about race-specific bioweapons they want to use to kill certain races of people. And that barely got any news coverage. Our local Austin paper thought it was horrific, wrote an article about it. For people that want to look that up, you think I'm joking. But the PNAC document's public. The reason I would make a new 9/11 film now would be I would start it with just all the admitted governments, the Nazis, the Czars, the Communist Russians, Israel, the United States, England, they do it constantly. So from the USS Liberty to Operation Ajax in Iran, to the Gulf of Tonkin, to Operation Northwoods, right through, and then events that happened after 9/11, I would just look at all the other events in the first half of the film. And then I would look at how 9/11 changed our world, and then I would say, now here's the top 20 points of 9/11. Like, I would do 9/11 at the end. Because people are like, well, why would you just say it's an inside job, even though there's the mode of the police take the takeover? But you know, the fact is just hard-hitting with all these historians and proof and documents. Okay, here's 20 false flags our government and other governments did. And here's how our world changed and how they used it and how they're now saying it isn't Al-Qaeda. It's people that don't like big government or the terrorists and returning veterans. And then, oh, they're funding Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya and you know, show that history. And show how our world has changed. And then go, do you now want me to show you why 9/11 is an inside job? Okay, I will. Not just who's got a motive, who's got a history of it, but here's 20 points. And by the way, sit there with just a list.
That'd be awesome.
Showing, maybe have an extra that's like 2 hours with another 100 points.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the problem with 9/11, is that it is ridiculous how out in the open this is. That's what's frustrating.
That'd be fun. I can't wait. Extras. This next one actually was the one you not. And it says, hello, Alex. There's a YouTuber that shows the visual proof that the paintings from Michelangelo and others in the 1600s did not simply paint images of God, but rather the nebulous structures that exist within the Orion Nebula. He provides so many examples that it's pretty arguable that the ancient people of the world knew, as David Icke says, the true nature of consciousness. So what are your thoughts on any of that?
Certainly ancient cultures know a lot more than they're given credit for. Certainly the pyramids weren't built the way we were told. The Dogon tribe, all these different tribes had knowledge of star systems that were way further out. I don't know is the answer. I've got documents admitting they've got plans for forced inoculation. People say, oh, that's your opinion. I interviewed all the top admirals who heard the call from LBJ to let the ship sink, and the Israeli pilots went public that USS Liberty was staged. People go, oh, that's just your opinion. Well, no, it's not. I've interviewed like 20 people from the ship. I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed dozens of people from Oklahoma City. They say, oh, that's just your opinion. Oh, really, the cops, the witnesses, of that being an inside job. So I just don't go there, because I could study that all day long and never really get an answer. Because, yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, the cave paintings. I've seen the, you know, the Aztec stuff that looks like flying saucers. I've seen, you know, the Egyptian hieroglyphs, and thought it was made up on the internet when I actually looked up the official photos and stuff, and it's real, and how they've walled off most of that. The truth is, everything the elite do is about suppressing technologies developed in the last 100 years, not just Nikola Tesla, but others.
Mm-hmm.
We are living in what we think's 2012, but
no,
the established,
years behind.
Exactly, the establishment is, and that's their power trip.
Yeah.
I mean, how uncool is that for the ruling elite to, like, put us down here in this TV land BS thing where the average person is watching, you know, Dancing with the Stars and Somebody's Got Talent, and meanwhile dumbing us down and giving us cancer and all this while they prance around in the national security state that our inventors, our scientists, our money built. They take our best and recruit them, and they go behind that iron curtain of national security and disappear.
And then the worst people are taking control of our development. It's just, it's horrible.
Right. And we touched on this too. I mean, they earn billions and they pay, if they ever do, pay fines of minuscule amounts in comparison.
Well, by some strange twist of fate, the Eloi will become the slaves and the Morlocks the masters.
I don't like that. The Freeman One asks you, when are you going to make the next Brothers in Arms episodes? And when you make the next one, can you guys shoot up old cars and maybe a block wall to show the power?
We have got the sponsors lined up. The guys want to do it. I have just bit off more than I can chew. We've hired 6 new graphics people. I'm hiring probably 5-6 more reporters. The equipment, the people, the staff, the room, do we buy another building or do we rent the one? I mean, there's a lot goes into this to get to this level we've gotten to. And we could do this because of you, the listeners, supporting us.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of that depends on you. I'm trying to hire some more salespeople so that we could sell to have the money to get the sponsors with guns and go out and shoot it and the camera people. And there's a lot that goes into it. And then, the waiver forms and just all of it. But yes, I do plan on gun shows in the future. Steiner Brothers are great guys. They want to be involved. I just had a dinner with Shane Steiner. It's a cool dinner over at their Steiner Steakhouse Friday night. Mrs. Mustaine, awesome. Dave Mustaine, my wife, the kids, and Shane Steiner with them. We were having our meeting about that. And Dave wants to come out on the show, so you might see a Brothers in Arms down the road. I did some shooting with Dave this weekend, but we're going to wait to release that for a while.
Okay.
But a lot of cool stuff coming up, so yes. We've already shot the next episode of Brothers in Arms, but we shot it on this right here at my house, and it's awesome. Okay, all right, keep going here.
The exclusive look there. This next one comes to you from Kimberly from upstate New York, and she says, great interview with Congresswoman Blackburn. Maybe next time you can speak to her, you can suggest that she and the other Congress officials send out a request to their constituents to rally in front of Congress. So is there anything that you have to say to that? Maybe bring her back on and do that, or any sort of idea on mainstream media leverage, if you will.
Well, I mean, these politicians need to get people rallied already. Yeah. I mean, if they claim, where's the Tea Party? You got co-opted by a bunch of, a bunch of establishment Republicans. Here, I'm going to show you some of this.
Is this the Brothers in Arms video?
Hold on, we're not going to put this on TV yet. I can't wait to put this out on air.
This is the kind of stuff that you should send on your Facebook, Alex.
Well, no.
Is this like the legit version?
No. Look at what we're shooting. Hold on. Folks don't get to see this yet.
I think so. He just shot a big, what would you call it, knight armor?
You know those knights you see at Mexican food restaurants? wait till you see it.
Oh,
yeah, God. We're getting ready for the next Brothers in Arms, to answer your question. All right. And I'm working like 7 days a week here. Go ahead.
All right. This is, I think we kind of summed up the Congresswoman Blackburn question. It'd be great, but they kind of need to take care of it themselves. The next one is from Steven from San Diego, and he says, Tom Woods and James Colbert are recent converts to anarcho-capitalism, and I've heard you agreeing with them. So what are your thoughts? When are you going to embrace it? Anarcho-capitalism.
Like I suddenly agree with them? I mean, I've always been of a libertarian mind. People can sell all these great pipe dreams about the total state and how great it's going to be. Government, 9 times out of 10, delivers disaster, enslavement, poverty, special interest controlling government, shutting down their competition and getting rich off government welfare, corporate welfare. So, I mean, I've always been, on two polar opposites of total state, Borg, hive mind versus total anarchy. I am trying to get away from the gravitational political pull of big government towards anarchy. But anarchy itself in its pure form, past these dreams these dreamers have, like when the Soviets had their dreams.
It's not a permanent form.
Well, exactly. Let's say you had a state that voted to be totally out in the open. You would immediately get criminal gangs that got together that came and tried to take over your area. And so you have to be like Switzerland, armed and ready to defend and some type of, mutual defense structure where people agree upon a code and, agree that they're going to defend each other. But a system like that creates so much wealth when you are free that your kids become spoiled rotten and make deals with the guy in the next state just because it'll make dad mad.
Right. Right.
So you're, you know, the reason you always get a government is because there's another big government trying to come take you over. So they can't really answer that question properly. And believe me, I do all the research. I've read over it. So I'm just saying, hey, I know you guys got all the answers, pie in the sky, this Valhalla of no government. Can we just get rid of the private Federal Reserve, though, that poses as government? Because you see, so many of the globalists are actually trying to fund the libertarian movement right now because they've already stolen the money. They've already made themselves offshore and exempt from the governments they control. Now they want to move to the mode of exempting themselves completely. Now that they've stolen everything. Mm-hmm. So if there was a collectivized dam and they got handed it by government and now they're going to charge us for the power from that over what it should be when they bought us. See, it's more sophisticated than just getting up and saying, you know, I'm a anarchic capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
People say, well, you have Ron Paul on promoting gold and silver currencies, but then you have another guy on for state banks, another lady on, you know, promoting a government fiat system. Which is it? Well, it's about you making a decision. It's about educating people about monetary issues. It's not about saying this is the one way and this is the absolute way. All I know is I don't like foreign banks that happen to be eugenicists who funded Hitler, Stalin, and Mao in control and signing us onto their debt. Let's get rid of that system.
Mm-hmm.
And
good place to start.
And if it transitioned, because the problem is they own all the gold, too, is a problem. So I'd be for a gold system, but the elites have most of it. You know, do we get back to a government system where everyone's educated about it? And then there's a fiat system that's controlled and zero interest credit like the bankers got to the people. Listen, they act like, oh, we're trying to make the economy go quick. The bankers actually brag they want a post-industrial world and that they're mad there's so much wealth and so much ingenuity. They call it overheating, that everything they do with taxes is to shut down production. They've given over $40 trillion just in the U.S. in the last 5 years to the banksters to bail out the debt they created as they hold us hostage. If $40 trillion had been loaned by a federal bank or the state banks, I like the idea of it being broken up, to the people, do you have any idea what 0% interest at $40 billion would do?
I can't even imagine it. I mean,
it would be amazing.
There would be so many businesses and things starting up.
And people argue, well, that would overheat like the real estate thing. Whatever. At least you get some real economy. The point is this is a complex system we're talking about. And I have spent 20 years studying it, 17 years on air. And there is no simple answer other than you need local control. You need states' rights. You need the Bill of Rights, Constitution. Because there's a lot of libertarians and anarcho capitalists go, man, that's 1776. You know, I like this thing the founder of PayPal's pushing, just free islands with all the sex you want, and it's going to be totally cool. And no more taxes. Bull.
Right.
That's the globalist coming along going, oh, this libertarian thing's hot. Let's sell them on our version. So I'm not looking for pie in the sky like, you know, the opposite of anarchic capitalism, the total collectivist computer run, who programs the computer nightmare of Zeitgeist. Where we all go live in plastic superdomes together. Give me the total anarchic capitalism over that.
Right.
But basically, if you don't have a free, informed, involved, aggressive population, anything you do is going to be game and taken over by corrupt people. That's the secret
you
of politics.
Have human nature to do that.
That's it. If you're not fiercely independent, agreeing on a basic stoic code of the family and decency and honor, mm-hmm. and being aggressive,
mm-hmm.
you've got to be willing when somebody gets in your face to get right back in their face.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's the creed of slaves to do otherwise. So until we stop following the creed of slaves, any system that they try to implement will be backdoored and gamed from minute one.
I think we should do a little excerpt on that later. Really interesting.
Let's get Jacobson's take. Rob, come on over here to the mic. You can kneel down and talk. I only have a chair for you. Here, jump in here, Jacobson. Jacobson, give us your take on, you know, communism versus anarchy.
Well, I would mostly agree with what you said. I think that while anarchy sounds great and at the end of
Jacobson never says until he's on air. Just hit it. Do your normal self, Jacobson.
Basically, if you have an anarchy system, what you're going to have is you're going to have organized crime swooping in immediately, pretending like they're a bunch of kings and burning down everybody's house. Because if you walk away from your own land, unless you're armed and you're staying there all the time, somebody's going to come and burn it down. I think that basically what has to happen is, outside of total communism, we have to break it down to local rule sheriffs is the answer.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's say, there you go, Jacobson. Yeah. Listen. We're always hearing about pie in the sky, no rules. That's because the bankers now have taken over a lot of libertarianism. They want that for themselves. We have to say, can we just get back to the Bill of Rights, the Constitution? Can we just get back to due process? Can we just get back to that? And then we can debate all day because the media says the Constitution failed. No, it didn't. We gave up on it. What we have now didn't create this. Capitalism didn't create this. Free market didn't create this. Crony insider stuff, people above the law. Hell, the bankers are living in anarchy. They get away with whatever they want. We're under all this communism down here. They're up there at the global level, a free-for-all.
In fact, you can consider the system we're living in right now just a major anarchy, being taken over by the most major criminal group on Earth, and we're just under their subjection right now because, according to their point of view, it isn't ours. It's a lawlessness that they live in, and we're underneath their thumb, and there's no law for us, and there's no law for them either. And basically,
exactly. People aren't even identifying what this is. I mean, they're not even identifying what this is. Like, most of the libertarians battle with cops all day. Cops are people that went to college or whatever, get a degree, and are just out there. Some of them control freaks, some of them good, some of them bad. We need to talk about the system. And I'm not critiquing the libertarian thought. It's just that there's like this thing of like, I can say the word anarchic capitalism, the term. Why don't you join that with us? Why don't you come on up here? Others have been covering it. I see you suddenly agree. Let me tell you about geopolitical systems. Alex, have you ever heard of 9/11 truth? Anyways, and I'm like, no, I had never heard of that. Again, folks, if you want freedom, it's a hard job, but it's a fun job because being a slave is a lot harder. Jacobs, any other points on that?
No, I just think that what has to happen is it should be local governments, local control. And what happens
because those are firewalls. If you don't like the corruption of town, you move. Suddenly everybody votes with their feet, their dollars. They leave Boss Hogg.
Exactly. And if one sheriff happens to be corrupt, he'll be isolated in his own little community by all the law. Like you got other sheriffs surrounding him and it will be contained. Whereas as right now, it's like a nation.
Hold on. I see the IT guy. We've gone so long. The show is about to go live on TV. I got to go in there. Come on in. Do you need me? Do they get the show done? Are they ready? They're still going. Well, then the answer is we've got to stop with the questions for PlanetInfoWars.com. We'll addendum the three or four left. What is there, 10 left? There's 10 left. We'll do those. It takes three times to do 50 later. PlanetInfoWars.com. It's 6:55. You know what that means. Showtime.